Howard Culver, building with words a stairway to the stars.
Who has known heights shall bear forevermore an incommunicable thing that hurts his heart, as if a wing beat at the portal, challenging. And yet, lured by the gleam his vision wore, who once has trodden stars seeks peace no more.
A stairway to the stars, a pathway to peaceful reflection, on which one may walk and pause, and know again that beauty which those who build with words have indelibly etched in time for all to read, to hear, and to enjoy. From KFI Los Angeles, we hear music by Robert Mitchell, words by Howard Culver, Builders in the Night of a Stairway to the Stars.
If I were king, ah, love, if I were king, what tributary nations would I bring to stoop before your scepter and to swear allegiance to your lips and eyes and hair? Beneath your feet, what treasures I would fling. The stars should be your pearls upon a string, the world a ruby for your finger ring, and you should have the sun and moon to wear. If I were king, let these wild dreams and wilder moods take wing. Deep in the woods I hear a shepherd sing a simple ballad to a sylvan air. Oh, love that ever finds your face more fair, I could not give you any godlier thing if I were king. After a male baby has grown out of long clothes and triangles and has acquired pants, freckles, and so much dirt that relatives... It becomes a boy. A boy is nature's answer to that false belief that there is no such thing as perpetual motion. A boy can swim like a fish, run like a deer, climb like a squirrel, balk like a mule, bellow like a bull, eat like a pig, or act like a jackass, according to climatic conditions. He is a piece of skin stretched over an appetite, a noise covered with smudges. He is called a tornado because he comes at the most unexpected times, hits the most unexpected places, and leaves everything a wreck behind him. He is a growing animal of superlative promise, to be fed, watered, and kept warm. A joy forever, a periodic nuisance, the problem of our times, the hope of a nation. Every boy born is evidence that God is not yet discouraged of man. Were it not for boys, the newspapers would go unread and 1,000 picture shows would go bankrupt. Boys are useful in running errands. A boy can easily do the family errands with the aid of five or six adults, the zest with which a boy does an errand is equaled only by the speed of a turtle on an August day. The boy is a natural spectator. He watches parades, fires, fights, ball games, automobiles, boats, and airplanes with equal fervor, but will not watch the clock. The man who invents a clock that will stand on its head and sing a song when it strikes will win the undying gratitude of millions of families whose boys are forever coming to dinner about supper time. Boys faithfully imitate their dads in spite of all efforts to teach them good manners. A boy, if not washed too often, and if kept in a cool, quiet place after each accident, will survive broken bones, hornets, swimming holes, fights, and nine helpings of pie. It looked extremely rocky for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 2-4, with but an inning left to play. So, when Cooney died at second and Burroughs did the same, a pallor wreathed the features of the patrons of the game. The straggling few got up to go, leaving there the rest with that hope which springs eternal within the human breast. For they thought, if only Casey could get a whack at that. They'd put even money now, with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, and likewise so did Blake. And the former was a puddin', and the latter was a fake. So on that stricken multitude, a death-like silence sat. For there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and the much-despised Blakey tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had lifted and they saw what had occurred, there was Blakey safe at second, and Flynn a-huggin' third. Then, from the gladdened multitude went up a joyous yell. It rumbled in the mountaintops, it rattled in the dell. It struck upon the hillside and rebounded on the flat. For Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile on Casey's face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. No stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt. Then, when the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance glanced in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered spear came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman, the ball unheeded sped. "That ain't my style," said Casey.
"Strike one,"
the umpire said. From the benches black with people, there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on the stern and distant shore.
"Kill him, kill the umpire,"
shouted someone on the stand. And it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He made the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher. And once more the spheroid flew, but Casey still ignored it. And the umpire said,
"Strike two."
Fraud, cried the maddened thousands, and the echo answered, fraud. But one scornful look from Casey and the audience was odd. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain. And they knew that Casey wouldn't let the ball go by again. The sneer is gone from Casey's lips. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel vengeance his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball. And now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. All somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere. And somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing. And somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
Howard Culver, assisted by Robert Mitchell at the organ, is building with words A Stairway to the Stars. Whither, midst falling dew, while glow the heavens with the last steps of day, far through their rosy depths, dost thou pursue thy solitary way? Vainly the fowler's eye might mark thy distant flight to do thee wrong, as darkly seen against the crimson sky thy figure floats along. Seekest thou the plashy brink of weedy lake, or marge of river wide? Or where the rocking billows rise and sink on the chafed ocean side. There is a power whose care teaches the way along that pathless coast, the desert and illimitable air, lone wandering, but not lost. All day thy wings have fanned at that far height the cold, thin atmosphere, yet stoop not, weary, to the welcome land, though the dark night is near. And soon that toil shall end. Soon shalt thou find a summer home and rest and scream among thy fellows. Reeds shall bend soon o'er thy sheltered nest. Thou'rt gone. The abyss of heaven has swallowed up thy form. Yet on thy heart deeply has sunk the lesson thou hast given and shalt not soon depart. He who from zone to zone guides through the boundless sky thy certain flight, and the long way that I must tread alone, will lead my steps aright.
There was no band, no ceremonial. It wasn't even dramatic. A car honked outside, and he said, "Well, I guess that's for me." He picked up his bag, and his mother said, "You haven't forgotten your gloves." He kissed her and held out his hand to me. "Well, so long," he said. I took his hand, but all I could say was, "Good luck." The door slammed, and that was that. Another boy gone to war. I had advised waiting for the draft, waiting at least until he was old enough to register. He'd smiled at that and assured me that his mind was made up. He wanted peace, he said. Without peace, what good was living? There was finality in the way he said this, a finality at once grim and gentle. I had said no more about waiting. After the door closed behind him, I went upstairs to what had been his room. It was in worse chaos than usual. Clothing was scattered about, a tennis racket, his phonograph records, letters, invitations to parties he now would not attend. I went then to my room. On the wall was a picture of a little boy, his toothless grin framed in curls. The same boy who had just taken my hand and said, "Well, so long." Not much time, I thought, between the making of that picture and slamming of the front door. Suddenly, a queer thing happened. Objects came alive, whispered to me. The house was full of soft voices. They led me up to the attic, to a box of toy soldiers, a football helmet, a homemade guitar, class pictures, a stamp album, a penny bank with the lid pried off. The voices led me on to a folder stuffed with papers, report cards, letters, among them the wail of an exasperated teacher. "Though he looks like an angel..." A baptismal certificate, a ribbon won in a track meet, faded photographs, one taken on the memorable first day of long pants. I sat down and thought how time had flown. Why, it was only yesterday when I'd held him in my arms. That somehow made me remember all the scoldings I'd given him, the preachments, the exhortations to a virtue and wisdom I did not myself possess. I thought, too, of my last inarticulate good luck and wished that I had somehow been able to tell him how much I really loved him. Had he perhaps penetrated my brusque reserve? Had he guessed what was in my heart? And then I thought, what fools we are with our children. Always plotting what we shall make of them. Always planning for a future that never comes. Always intent on what they may be. Never accepting what they are. "Well, Curly Head, you're a man now. I hated to see you go, but I would not have halted you if I could. I cannot pretend I am not sad, but I'm proud, too. So long, son."
I want free life, and I want fresh air, and I sigh for the canter after the cattle, the crack of the whips like shots in a battle, the medley of horns and hoofs and heads that roars and wrangles and scatters and spreads, the green beneath and the blue above, and dash and danger and life and love and Lasca. Lasca used to ride on a mouse-gray Mustang close to my side, with blue serape and bright belled spur. I laughed with joy as I looked at her. Little she knew of books or of creeds, and Ave Maria sufficed her needs. Little she cared save to be by my side, to ride with me and ever to ride from San Saba's shore to Lavaca's tide. She was bold as the billows that beat. She was wild as the breezes that blow. From her little head to her little feet, she was swayed in her suppleness to and fro by each gust of passion. A sapling pine that grows on the edge of a Kansas bluff and wars with the wind when the weather is rough is like this Lasca, this love of mine. She would hunger that I might eat, would take the bitter and leave me the sweet. But once, when I made her jealous for fun at something I whispered or looked or done one Sunday in San Antonio to a glorious girl on the Alamo, she drew from her garter a dear little dagger and, sting of a wasp, it made me stagger an inch to the left or an inch to the right, and I shouldn't be maundering here tonight. But she sobbed, and sobbing so swiftly bound her torn rebozo about the wound that I quite forgave her. Scratches don't count in Texas, down by the Rio Grande. Her eye was brown, a deep, deep brown. Her hair was darker than her eye, and something in her smile and frown, curled crimson lip and instep high, showed that there ran in each blue vein, mixed with the milder Aztec strain, that vigorous vintage of old Spain. She was alive in every limb with feeling to the fingertips. And when the sun is like a fire, and sky one shining soft sapphire, one does not drink in little sips. The air was heavy, the night was hot. I sat by her side and forgot the herd that were taking their rest, forgot that the air was close oppressed, that the Texas norther comes sudden and soon, in the dead of night or the blaze of noon, that once let the herd at its breath take fright, nothing on earth can stop the flight, and woe to the rider and woe to the steed who falls in front of their mad stampede. Was that thunder? I grasped the cord of my swift Mustang without a word. I sprang to the saddle and she clung behind, away on a hot chase down the wind. But never was fox hunt half so hard, and never was steed so little spared, for we rode for our lives. You shall hear how we fared in Texas, down by the Rio Grande. The Mustang flew and we urged him on. There was one chance left and you have but one. Halt, jump to the ground and shoot your horse. Crouch under his carcass and take your chance. And if the steers in their frantic course don't batter you both to pieces at once, you may thank your star. If not, goodbye to the quickening kiss and the long-drawn sigh and the open air and the open sky in Texas, down by the Rio Grande. The cattle gained on us, and just as I felt for my old six-shooter behind my belt, down came the Mustang, and down came we, clinging together. And what was the rest? A body that spread itself on my breast, two arms that shielded my dizzy head, two lips that hard on my lips were pressed, then thunder in my ears, as over us surged the sea of steers, blows that beat blood into my eyes. And when I could rise, Lasca was dead. I gouged out a grave a few feet deep. And there in Earth's arms I laid her to sleep. And there she is lying, and no one knows. And the summer shines and the winter snows. For many a day the flowers have spread a pall of petals over her head. And the little gray hawk hangs aloft in the air. And the sly coyote trots here and there. And the black snake glides and glitters and slides into a rift in a cottonwood tree. And the buzzard sails on and comes and is gone, stately and still, like a ship at sea. And I wonder why I do not care for the things that are like the things that were. Does half my heart lie buried there in Texas, down by the Rio Grande?
Stairway to the Stars, a pathway to peaceful reflection, along which we have walked together and enjoyed the beauty which those who build with words have etched in time for all to know. The steps used by Howard Culver in building tonight's Stairway to the Stars were If I Were King by Justin McCarthy, An Unknown Writer's Definition of a Boy, Casey at the Bat by Ernest Lawrence Thayer, To a Waterfowl by William Cullen Bryant, So Long, Son by Howard Vincent O'Brien, and Alaska by Frank Depre. Between readings, Robert Mitchell played For You, A Dirty Hands, Dirty Face, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, In the Good Old Summertime, Adagio Patatique, Keep the Home Fires Burning, and Estrellita.
Who has known heights shall bear forevermore an incommunicable thing that hurts his heart, as if a wing beat at the portal challenging, and yet, lured by the gleam his vision wore, who once has trodden stars seeks peace no more.
From KFI in Los Angeles, we have presented music by Robert Mitchell, words by Howard Culver, Builders in the Night of a Stairway to the Stars. Selection of material and production of the program were by Patrick Kelly. Your written comments and requests will be appreciated. Until next Saturday at 9, this is Jim Barry saying thank you and good night from Stairway to the Stars. Thank you.